it's time to go out and...
Hey, everybody, from Mad Night Club, at the end of... Yes, looking more every day like the end of the world. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, with you here on the Lifeboat Hour. It is Sunday, the 21st of April, 2013. My God, how did we make it this long? Okay, we're still in there. My really, really good friend from Facebook, a guy named Michael Montes, who's a brilliant writer, sent me this today, and it's perfect to start the show with. It is an Ojibwe prayer written by an Ojibwe elder in the 19th century. And it says, Grandfather, look at our brokenness. We know that in all creation, only the human family has strayed from the sacred way. We know that we are the ones who are divided, and we are the ones who must come back together to walk the sacred way, Grandfather. Sacred One, teach us love, compassion, and honor, that we may heal the earth and heal each other. May your evening be filled with love, healing, and peace. And so it is. Aho. That was from my friend Michael Mantis. Many blessings. That was written by Kalpuli Teokali Olin, of the Ojibwe people. All right, now, we got to have an attitude adjustment before I invite Guy McPherson into this space. He's a man of honor, so I want to set this space real clearly. Regarding Boston, everybody, get over it. Get over it. I am really tired of hearing about it, and if you were not bright enough to get that this is the norm now, that we live in a police state where crimes are, pretense show acting, and the cops are going to be kicking down our doors. If you weren't ready for this by now, you're too slow a camper to be in my lifeboat. I've been warning you about this. Many of us have been screaming about this for years. Do not act surprised, and do not take the bait. Because over the course of this last week, instead of talking about Boston where three people died, you could have been talking about a Waco fertilizer plant where 15 people died, because infrastructure is failing, because it's the collapse of human industrial civilization. Instead of talking about Boston, you could have talked about the fact that there's a huge power ship burning diesel off the shores of Lebanon so that Beirut can have some electricity. Instead of talking about Boston, you might have talked about the fact that Congress has exempted most federal workers from key insider trading reporting requirements. Or, instead of being obsessed about Boston, which is no surprise, the sun's going to rise in the east tomorrow. We're living in a fascist state. Oh, my God, there's gambling going on in this establishment. We could have been talking about President Obama raising the permissible levels of nuclear radiation in your drinking water 27,000 times. We could have talked about now that there's no requirement for evacuations after nuclear catastrophes. We could have talked about the acceptable daily dose level has been raised to the equivalent of 3 chest x-rays, regardless of age or gender. Great thanks to my friend Damien DeVoe for putting that up. Helen Caldicott, a woman of honor, wrote about it on Global Research. Helen, she's amazing. We could have been talking about that. Or we could have been talking about the fact, this is an Associated Press story from the second, okay. Sorry, that's a little bit dated, but they're still warning about a tank explosion at the Hanford nuclear reactor. But more than anything else, what we could have been talking about this week was the fact that Australia has dumped the U.S. dollar. But no. It's more important for people to speculate, for Alex Jones and all those guys to go out. This is from a publication called The Trumpet. Australia to abandon the U.S. dollar. This is from April 11th. I held on to this. But it was a big story. It's a huge story. China is very, very much on the move. China is aggressive now. It's making moves on the dollar. And that includes North Korea and that sideshow there that is still acting bizarre and berserk, which is all part of everything. And this stuff is important. This was an amazing week, and I'm sick of hearing about Boston. I'm not speculating about it. I'm not wasting your time and my time on it. If you guys haven't figured out that that's the way this country was going to be operating by now, the bear is going to get you. But also during the week this week, Alex Jones and Glenn Beck showed some color. Alex Jones is going down. I'm warning everybody who's laying down with him. You're going to get up with his fleas. He was up screaming false flag attack about Boston and some hysterical bad information. But then he even got on after the Waco explosion and said it was a missile attack. Now, Alex Jones has no honor. Now, Glenn Beck has called for, you know, Barack Obama to admit it was an inside job. Hey, everybody, Glenn Beck and Barack Obama are on the same team, and it's about honor. And I'm saying that very clearly tonight because I have great respect for our guest. Guy McPherson was a man of honor who walked away from a tenured professorship with all the rights, privileges, perks pertaining thereto because it was the honorable thing to do. And that's what I did with LAPD, and I have had so many men, male and female, teachers of honor in my life. From LAPD, Jesse Brewer. I had Vandana Shiva, Christina Borges, and April Oliver, Cynthia McKinney. People of honor are all around, and I am tired of having people who have no honor being given any respect. We're getting down to the wire here, folks, so I don't need to hold back. Because there's a lot of us out here who went to great lengths and great pains and great sacrifices throughout the course of our careers and up to the very present moment in our lives to carry a message to you with honor that you could trust. Now, as I get ready to bring Guy on, I hope he's listening to all this. Guy McPherson, when I went to Boulder last week and covered the Charles Eisenstein events, which were absolutely fabulous, there was one name that I heard mentioned over and over again more than any other at every event, and it was Guy McPherson, who was on this guest almost on the show almost exactly a year ago. And then he said something like, and he can correct me on this, but essentially there were, high teens, low 20s number of independent, peer-reviewed scientific studies from multiple locations saying that a 2 degree centigrade increase in temperature was cooked in, pardon the pun, to what's happening on the world right now, and that nobody has disputed that a 2 degree centigrade change in temperature is lethal to human life. So it brings up the issue of priorities. But I am tired of, and I will kick off Facebook or anybody, any place else, people who cannot understand why we do not go to people who lie to us and try to tell us that that they have something we need. Not in this space, not on this show. Guy McPherson is now, hopefully Guy's coming back in here because I'm getting ready to introduce him. He's a professor emeritus of natural resources, ecology, and evolutionary biology from the University of Arizona. He gave up that position. But he was born and raised in the heart of the Aryan Nation, a small town in northern Idaho. He experienced hair-raising incidents of rifles being pointed at the base of his neck as a child. And all of the insanity and the violence and the cruelty that goes with that kind of mentality, pulled himself out of that, and then he left. He gave it up when he couldn't participate in the lie anymore. And that's why these are the only kind of people you can trust out there now. So Guy's been very outspoken, and he has become something of an iconic speaker out there. His website is guymcpherson.com. And before I introduce him, and this is why I want to pick up. Well, first of all, Guy, are you there? And if so, welcome back.
I am. Thanks for having me, Mike. I appreciate the opportunity.
Good, man. Good. I think it was last December you wrote an essay called Only Love Remains. And in that you wrote, quote, "Finally, more than half a century into a largely unexamined life, I have come to love humanity and the living planet. The wisdom of Jimi Hendrix, long hidden beneath the cultural programming one would expect in the backwoods, redneck logging town of my youth, nags at me. The living planet and a decent human community sustain each of us, whether we realize it or not. Our years on this most wondrous of planets, regardless of how numerous they are to be celebrated. After all, we get to die, and that makes us the lucky ones. It means we get to live." Where have you come since then, Guy? You've been out there, and people have really responded to your emotional, visceral response to the way things are deteriorating.
Well, it's been a roller coaster, as you might expect. And it was a roller coaster before then as well. It looks like this omnicidal set of living arrangements is going to come to a close, and then stunningly it makes a comeback and therefore keeps driving to extinction a couple hundred species a day, ratcheting up climate change, and you know, all the bad news associated with industrial civilization keep coming back.
Let me start by asking you to step back into your discipline. I much like it when you're painting from a broader palette. But since you were on last, we've had a number of other things become apparent. We've had many, many large sinkholes opening up around the planet. We've had increased seismic activity and volcanism. Weather patterns continue to be highly erratic. Would you mind just giving us a quick update on where all that stands right now?
It's an absolute mess. Self-reinforcing feedback loops are up to a dozen now, and they just keep coming in waves at us. These are all from highly reputable sources, mostly from the Refereed Journal literature. And, I mean, the consequences are horrific. We're already losing 400,000 people a year to early death as a result of climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And that number is certain to increase, to hit the exponential phase in the not-too-distant future, because we're doing nothing to slow it down, and there are these big lags, inertia in the climate system that make it seem as if things are pretty normal now. The last 15 years, all the deniers point out that the planet hasn't heated that much. Well, that's because a huge amount of the heating has gone into the deep oceans, as has been recently pointed out in the Refereed Journal literature. And so the heating has been ongoing, yes. It's not evident in surface temperatures, especially in land surface temperatures.
There's only so much the deep ocean can hold, right?
Exactly.
And so, what happens when that threshold is crossed, I wonder?
Well, here's just a minor example from among many of the positive feedbacks. The Arctic ice, of course, is in a death spiral. And we last saw an open Arctic at any time, somewhere between 3 million years ago and 5 million years ago, before there were Homo sapiens walking the planet in any event. And the amount of energy required to melt ice at 32 degrees Fahrenheit, 0 degrees Celsius, to melt 1 gram of that ice and change it to a liquid phase requires 1 calorie.
Okay.
On the other hand, if you put that same calorie into the melted ice, into the water, once it's melted, put that same calorie into that same gram of water, it heats up 80 degrees.
Whoa.
So when we lose the ice in the Arctic, and we will in the relatively near future, there's no doubt in my mind, things are going to really completely spin out of control. Already we're seeing that huge amplitude of the jet stream as the difference between the Arctic and the equator narrows, and that's what is causing that increased amplitude of the jet stream. It's causing those freezing events that used to be restricted to Canada and the northern tier of the United States. Now they're going all the way down into Mexico every couple of years. That's because of the amplitude of the jet stream, because the Arctic is melting already.
Now, I have seen one report, news story that I thought was pretty credible, that said that we might see an ice-free Arctic this summer. Is that true? Do you buy that?
Yes, it could happen as early as this September.
Oh.
Paul Beckwith is saying, he's a climate scientist at the University of Ottawa, and a colleague of his, Sam Carana, is asking the question. He's not answering it affirmatively, but he's asking the question, could it actually happen this year? Yes, it could happen this year. I see we no way we make it past 2015, and it could happen as early as this year.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but it's kind of self-evident that once all of the Arctic ice is gone in the summer, the rate of heating accelerates, what, exponentially, logarithmically up there, because there's nothing to reflect.
That's right. That's a classic positive feedback or self-reinforcing feedback loop. Once you have that open water, you lose the reflectance. The albedo increases. You start absorbing more heat, and it doesn't take all that many calories, as I just mentioned, to convert that to a much, much warmer environment than we're currently seeing.
And we have also seen recent stories on CollapseNet and on my Facebook page that the Antarctic ice shelf is breaking up now, too. So, okay, we know that we're, pardon the pun again, cooked on that front. What else is going on of significant interest climatologically?
Well, follow up on your point about Antarctic ice. The summer ice melt in Antarctica this last year was its highest level in 1,000 years.
Oh.
Melting 10 times quicker than it was 600 years ago. With the most rapid melt occurring in the last 50 years, this is according to Nature's Geoscience in a paper just out earlier this month, April. And those are just two of the self-reinforcing feedback loops that we've kicked into play, all of them since 2010. So this is all relatively recent information, and they're coming at us increasingly quickly, it seems.
The last time you were on, about a year ago, you had said essentially at that point that the only thing that could save us was an immediate cessation of all industrial activity. How much further do we have to go now?
I strongly suspect that because of those positive feedbacks, even completion of the ongoing collapse will not prevent near-term human extinction as a result of climate change.
All right.
Scenario that would involve geoengineering and complete collapse and 27 other miracles that you might come up with that would actually allow our species to persist beyond another human generation.
Actually, my position has always been there's only one miracle that needs to take place, which is a complete overhaul of human consciousness. And once that happens, once we come to a collective understanding of our shared fate, and that the only thing that can save us is massive, unprecedented cooperation. There's not that miracle would take care of almost all the other ones, we hope. And perhaps if people like Greg Braden are right, release to us awareness of other technologies, which we might only be using to destroy ourselves in the present paradigm. Now, the reason why people were so affectionate toward you in Boulder, and it was really kind of amazing, was that they related to your relating to the totality and the, if you will, the heaviness or the gravitas of the situation. How are you looking at everything now? How do you get through a 24-hour period?
One foot in front of the other.
Yes. Breathe in and breathe out, yes.
Right. Well, and it has helped a great deal in the year since I was on your show, in the 6 or 8 months since I wrote that essay. My wife has actually moved here full time. She had been living in Tucson and visiting periodically. And so it's great to have a human community that now includes this house. I wrote then about having a loving human community, and the human community in this area I live is truly astonishing, the most accommodating, accepting group of people I've ever been around in my life. And so, obviously, that helps.
Yes.
You take it a day at a time. If you have decent people around you who are willing to talk about significant issues, that's huge. That's absolutely huge. So, I go to coffee every Tuesday morning, and there are people who are willing to tackle significant issues like climate change threatening our species with near-term human extinction. Try to start that conversation.
Well, I can do that in and around Crestone, Colorado, because, you know, it's not a dissimilar community to where you are, especially in our awareness and our survival based upon paying close attention to Mother Earth. We are in a nightclub at the end of the world, Guy McPherson, and this is kind of a cool thing that's emerging. Last week on the show, Carolyn Baker picked a song, and we can do that now because I can have co-hosts just go to YouTube and find an audio or a video of a song they want to play. We can do that. But you sent one tonight, and I think this is a tribute to you, and I can say this myself. When people start writing songs based upon your music, you're one step below a Latin American legend. You realize that? You know, when Poor Felipe was eaten by the volcano, they wrote a song about it, you know, and when Andalusia went out and saved a child from drowning, they write songs about that. And you sent me a link to a song. I'm going to let you set it up. The song is called Nature Bats Last. I'm going to let you set it up, and you cue it, and you say hit it when you want the board to play it. Tell us about the song.
This is great. This guy contacted me, a musician living in Johannesburg, South Africa. And he says, hey, I wrote a song, and I'm inspired by your work, and here's the song, and do you mind if I include some of your words in it? He actually included some of the words I had used in a presentation I delivered in February of 2012. And I said, no, that would be great. I'm honored that you would want to include my words and that I inspired you. And so the song is actually called Nature Bats Last, which is the name of my website.
Yes.
And so it's great. It's a great little song.
Well, let's play, then you come back and talk about it.
All right.
Here we go. Here we go.
GM planet is about to make a comeback. The living planet is about to make a comeback. The living planet is about to make a comeback. And that's really, really good news.
Okay, guy, tell us who was it wrote that? I have the name Afrizen. Is that a band name? What's the artist name? Do you know?
Well, interesting. He didn't want me to give his name because he's not out as a doomer with his family. And so,
Oh, God.
I know who he is, but...
Oh, dear.
He didn't want me to tell people because his family to know that he's a doomer, that he's writing these kinds of songs.
All right, so to all you closet doomers out there, there's more than one way to step out and drag. Just write a song. That's good. That was a great song. I really loved it. And actually, both songs that we have to play tonight are going to be like bookends. I'm going to get to a new white trash song here in a second. And here's something else that we could have been talking about instead of Boston. The nuclear plant in LaSalle, that's just north of Illinois, of Chicago, LaSalle Nuclear Plant, Illinois, had a complete catastrophic failure of its major cooling system. Gee, didn't hear about that, did you? No, too busy talking about Boston. The website is Piss on the, I like the name, pissontheroses.blogspot.com, but there's also an excellent video up. And in the video, they have the Nuclear Regulatory Commission documents confirming a complete failure of the cooling system and a rapid rise. The only thing that said it was due to a lightning strike, and again, lack of redundancy, as Matt Simmons would have said. But it came very close to a Fukushima-like meltdown, and that happened just a couple of days ago. I will look up the date. Now, Guy, here's something to think about, too, because you are a scientist, and you are a very good one. We have 440, 450 operating nuclear reactors in the world, aside from the military ones, upon which we are dependent for diminishing amounts of electricity, and we have a problem with those in that we have multiple reports that they're all defective. From a scientific standpoint, how do you compare that to the fact that we're all cooked?
Well, it's out of the frying pan into the fire. I mean, when collapse is complete, people aren't going to show up and monitor those. The grid is going to fail. They all rely upon grid-tied power to maintain the cooling systems. So I've been asking, imploring, begging for years to have those shut down safely as quickly as possible. But it's not going to happen. No. Recently, an ex-head of the NRC here in the United States pointed out that all 105 nuclear power plants in the United States have a problem with design. They're all... Even if the industrial civilization holds indefinitely, they're all going to melt down. They're all teetering on the brink right now. And never mind with the grid fails. So we never thought about that. You know, going back to the 1940s, nobody ever thought, well, what are we going to do with that waste anyway? What are we going to do when the backup systems fail? We just didn't think any of that through. And... so here we are. We're not in the Anthropocene like some people think. You hear a lot that we're in the Anthropocene, the geologic era that's dominated by our species. I think we're in the Endocene. I think the Anthropocene is behind us.
What does Endocene mean for those who don't know?
Endocene, it's the end.
Oh, like in Endofscene?
Yes, exactly.
See, laughter always helps with this stuff. Now, I'm going to set up a second song here, and then I want to open the lines because I believe there's a lot of people out there who would like to talk to Guy McPherson and benefit from both his and my twisted senses of humor. But we're right now at the bottom of the hour, and I am proceeding without commercial interruption tonight. I am grateful to the Progressive Radio Network for giving me the opportunity to do this on important shows. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, here at the Lifeboat Hour on PRN-FM, and now we're going to continue on with the show because it's an important show. Now, I think we're beginning to see that laughter and music do put a little lead back in the pencil, so to speak. And I have been talking about for some time New White Trash. That's me and Doug Lewis, Chris Vigard, and all those who helped us, and Bob Rice in Los Angeles. We have worked on an album all winter, and boy, it was a long, hard winter. We have a song with that name, but that's not the one I'm playing tonight. Tonight is a song that we rolled our quarters for and had Bob Rice, who is a master engineer, just finished working a tour with Paul Simon, who has worked with Roger Waters before us. He's just an amazing guy, an amazing musician, and he adds such amazing touches to our work. If we knew that we had a breakout song on the album, we have many, many good songs on the album, but I'll say this for myself. The song is written by me and Doug Lewis. I have an enormous footprint and stamp over this song because I was craving a song that talked about fighting back, and we just had one like that that was written about and inspired by the work of Guy McPherson. But this one is my personal message because it is time to start calling this, and it's also time to put a little cheer in our side. People who walk honorably, people who respect honorable people like Guy McPherson and all of the great guests and all of the people out there who have never compromised their honor, but also to sit back and realize that, as the shamanics would say, as a Graham Hancock might say, as I would say, not just with respect to ayahuasca, but with respect to any spiritual journey, what you have to do is go inside and face your own shadows. And the people who tend to apologize for Alex Joneses and the Glenn Becks and, oh, they mean well, are usually the ones who have lacked the courage to go in and face their own shadows. But that being said, for those willing to make that journey, the longest journey in the world between the head and the heart, there is a great deal of hope and there is power on the field. And I really wanted to write something that was kind of kicking back at the powers that were. And this is my shot at it. This is New White Trash's shot at it. Brand new song, first time it's ever been heard anywhere. It's called Son of Your Love. Fasten your seatbelts and hold on. I had so much fun with this. Let's go.
And last verse of the lie, the one that holds you down and keeps you paralyzed. By now you know the last and first name of the one. Big Brother wraps your fear and burns a shadow shadows gonna fall. Friends. says the time has come to see who's holding cards. 4 years we've measured life in yard by bloody yard. But now the sun is up and shadows flee in dread. Liberation's dawning, ray, see a rainbow sky instead.
Son of your son of your son of your son.
Yeah, that was so much fun. That was Son of Your Love by New White Trash. Yours truly singing the lead on that. That third verse just came to me like I was channeling, and it was so cool. My friends, the time has come to see who's holding cards. For years we've measured life in yard by bloody yard. Anyway, you can find that at newwhitetrash.com. A great thanks to Bob Rice, my bandmate Doug Lewis. You can hear that song there. You can download it. You can pay whatever you think it's worth. And any money we're getting in, we're using to mix the rest of our really cool tunes. I'm really proud of that one. And if I have to go out, I can hold that one up and say, yeah, I could sing and write a song. And it was great to share these songs with the same energy levels with our guest, Guy McPherson. If you want to call in tonight and ask Guy a question, talk to Guy, the number is 1-888-874-4888. And it's my understanding that we got Mike on the line. Mike, you there? Mike, are you there? Mike Sosaby, are you there? I have a message saying that you're there on hold. Hold on a minute. Now I'm getting a message from the board. His phone just cut off. We'll call back, Mike. Okay. So anyway, Guy, we're back. What did you think of the songs?
It's great, and I think, for the first 40 or so years of my life, I agreed with Plato's sentiments that music was a distraction from important contemporary issues of the day. And then finally I realized that he had Homer to choose from. And so maybe that wasn't really a fair comparison.
Yes.
So relatively recently I've come to the conclusion that arts matter, that art is amazing. And it's amazing that I spent, the first four decades of my life not realizing the importance of my right brain.
Well, the path you have walked is one that will force you to find your artistic side. There's a quote from that I've used many times from Anthony DeMello, who was a Jesuit mystic, who said, "There comes a time when you either go stark raving, irrevocably insane, or you become a mystic." And I think the same thing has to do with art and music, perhaps.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm getting a message. Okay, Mike, are you there now?
I sure am, Mike. How you doing?
All right, good. Say hi to Guy McPherson.
Hey, Guy, how you been?
Hey, Mike. Good. How about yourself?
Pretty good. I have a question that's kind of for both of you. When I was interviewing Guy McPherson for the film that we're doing somewhere in New Mexico before the end of time, which will be premiering on May 4th in Tucson, Arizona, I asked a question specifically, and because what I think Michael Rupert was kind of the opening for a lot of people to share these kind of messages, and I think you kind of pioneered the way. And one of the question I specifically asked Guy McPherson was, what is the parallel between Michael Rupert, who was a cop with the LAPD, a whistleblower, and Guy McPherson, who's an academic?
It's honor.
The University of Arizona as a whistleblower, and he had a very interesting answer. I wanted Guy McPherson to share that answer.
Uh-oh. Now we're in trouble.
Uh-oh. Go ahead, Guy.
I have no idea what my answer was.
Well, you actually talked about, you said it was a very intelligent answer. You said it was a difference between Guy McPherson is an academic, and Michael Rupert is a police officer. And there was a difference. You said, Michael Rupert was in a very structured place, and you, as an academic, there was not a bureaucratic situation you were looking at.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of talk about that, Guy.
Well, yeah, that's certainly true. The position, most academics are there because of the relative amount of freedom that they have to operate in that space. And, you know, the whole notion of tenure is to extend the First Amendment to tenured faculty members and to give them free license to conduct scholarship on and to teach things that they view are important. So it is a relatively unstructured situation. It's about as close to anarchy as we can get without moving out here and actually immersing yourself in agrarian anarchy.
Okay. I heard that, and as Guy was talking, I said, yeah, that makes great sense, but I have to tell you that I was just about to be promoted to detective in LAPD, but I had a guaranteed career path to deputy chief level, perhaps even chief someday, if I wanted it. And within that, I had enormous amounts of power as well. And I would say that what Guy and I both discovered respectively is that there were limits to the freedom, and it was the limits themselves which violated a basic core integrity. And I'll speak for myself, but I think Gobby nodding his head is that I could not live with myself if I accepted those limits. Guy?
Well, that's right, and the limits are imposed, I would argue, by this culture.
Yes.
By industrial culture. And they certainly extend to every walk of life in this country that I'm familiar with. Every position, every employment opportunity comes with an unspoken set of rules that you are expected to adhere to. And if you don't, that makes you not quite normal, and therefore you don't quite fit in.
Mm-hmm. Mike, thank you so much for calling. We got some calls stacking up, and I want to get to those because there's people that want to talk to Guy. Thank you, Mike Sosby, for calling in.
Thank you, Mike.
Tell us about the film again and when it premieres, and then I want to get to Jonathan from Philadelphia. Go ahead, Mike. Okay, he cut off. Guy, you can tell us if that comes up. Let's just go to the next caller. Jonathan from Philly, are you there?
Hey, what's up? It's me again.
Hey, man.
I got a question for Dr. McPherson. Or Mr. McPherson, and that is about the drought situation in the Midwest. Can you give me an update on it and tell me what the circumstances and situations is in regard to our food supply?
Yes, it's the most severe drought in at least 800 years, probably longer. I don't see us getting out of it for a significant amount of time. There might be a little blip here and there that causes a rainstorm now and then, but I think over the long haul, the Midwestern part of North America is seeing exactly where we're heading. Large land masses heat up faster than the average for the planet. So what we're seeing in the Midwest is extreme aridity compounded by extreme heat. That's not going to get any better. I think the northern hemisphere is going to run out of habitat for humans 10 or 15 years sooner than the southern hemisphere, and the interior of large land masses in the northern hemisphere will be the first place to go, the first places to go. And so that means the interior of North America, which is where you're calling from, is going to be a tough place for humans to survive beyond the next decade.
Wasn't that encouraging, Jonathan?
Okay. Yeah, thanks. well, it's a good thing. This is the first year I ever tried to grow my own food, so wish me luck.
It's a skill.
Good luck with that. And
I tell people all the time that I'm not depressed. I don't have depression, but I'm a carrier. So I'm sorry to bring that to you.
No, I appreciate your honesty. I always do. And Mike Rupert, your truth and honesty has inspired me beyond what you could imagine.
There's a whole lot of us out here, brother, and what is so beautiful, Jonathan, is that we're all like instruments in a symphony orchestra starting to tune up because there's some really nice harmonies that are showing up. Jonathan, thank you for calling.
All right.
Let's go to Joshua from Connecticut. You there?
Yep, I'm here.
Hey, man.
Hey, hi, Mike. Hey, Guy. My question for Guy is, realistically, what do you think we can expect to see environmentally, you know, climate-wise, in the Northeast, you know, as far as like New England, especially around the marine communities, probably for like the next year or so? What do you see realistically happening?
Well, I'm very reluctant to make short-term forecasts, and less than a year, certainly a short-term forecast, especially about specific regions. So I know that there is a Northeastern Climate Assessment Group. I would hook up with them, try to track down their information, and recognize that those are academic scientists, so they're being way, way too conservative, because that's what the culture drives them to do. That's been a long time.
I was kind of wondering if this Superstorm Sandy was kind of a, you know, hair bringer.
Well, absolutely. There's certainly going to be more of that. There's extreme sea level rise. That is exacerbated in the Northeastern United States. It's worse there than any place else already, and it's going to be worse to come. The Sandy is a harbinger of things to come, and the ocean is warming faster off the coast of the Northeastern United States than just about anywhere else on the planet.
Yeah, I can personally attest to that. I mean, last year I went out and did some offshore sailing, and I've never seen it warm like that. If, you know, in late June, it felt typically like you would expect to see it in late August. It was noticeably warmer.
Right, and you know, over the long term, the trend is going to be in that direction. Over the short term of a year or less, it's hard to say what is going to happen.
Guy, is it fair to say scientifically that what we can expect is increasing instability?
Absolutely. That's
okay.
Already begun. And so you know, the examples are numerous at this point of extreme instability. You look at Australia adding colors to their map. You look at Superstorm Sandy. You look at Katrina and Isaac and Ike, and on it goes. The storm that followed Sandy that was hardly reported at all in the news was a storm that extended from eastern North America all the way to western Europe and northwestern Africa. It covered the entire Atlantic Ocean.
Wow.
That's a big storm.
I saw a picture of that. It was absolutely breathtaking. But one now has challenges of how many breathtaking, hard-to-believe images we can hold in our consciousness at the same time. Joshua, thanks so much for calling in. We got a couple more callers. I want to give them all time to talk to Guy. Elaine from Oregon, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
Hi. I was just calling. I just want to thank both of you for the work that you do. Michael Rupert, my husband and I got to see you in Eugene, Oregon at the McDonald Theater.
Oh, yeah.
I believe it was 2005 or 2006.
I think it was 05 or very early 06, yes. I remember it well. I love Eugene.
Yeah, I walked out of that theater. My husband was the one that, you know, kind of dragged me along. He's like, I think we need to go see Michael Rupert. And I'm like, oh, I'm just not sure I'm ready for that. And I walked out of there, and you changed my life for the better. And you woke me up. And since then, I've been living, you know, a pretty simple life. My husband and I grow about 60% of what we eat.
Mm.
And since then, Guy McPherson was here, visited us on the property. And I can't say enough to thank both of you for the work that you do and for waking, you know, so many people up.
In order to be fair to
real life.
To us, Guy had said he's a, you know, he copped out to being a carrier of depression, but Guy, take it from my longevity, because it was the longest time before I ever realized how many people I had reached and how many people were grateful. There are an enormous amount of people who are very, very grateful to you and for you. And now that you're blushing, you got to respond to that.
I am blushing. My heart is beating 90 miles an hour because I'm not used to doing this. But
well, now Guy's got to respond to it. We got to hear what he's got to say.
Well, thanks, Elaine. I appreciate that, and I appreciate what you and David are doing, have been doing for a long time. And you're doing it all right, and you're meeting considerable resistance along the way. In my mind, that's one of the ways you can tell you're doing things all right. It's a tough row to hoe, and you and David are doing great stuff.
Well, I appreciate that, Guy, and I know David just said to me that we're very happy that your wife is with you now, and I don't know if either one of you can say anything to the youth. You know, I have two daughters that, you know, sometimes we've had difficult conversations over this. I think they both know in their heart, they're good people, and it would just be interesting to hear your thoughts on what you can say to the youth. You know, we've heard that, well, you can't, you know, if you think that the gig is up, then why do you continue to get up in the morning?
All right, Guy, you first, and then I'll follow. Elaine, thank you, and next we'll go to Matt from North Carolina.
Okay, thank you so
Guy,
much.
Go ahead. Thanks, Elaine.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's an amazing time to be alive, no matter how young or old you are. You know, Mike pointed out opening the show that the odds against any one of us being here exceed the odds against plucking an atom from the entire universe. It's pretty incredible that we're here, and what we get to see is the greatest contraction in the history of the civilized world, and as a consequence, the greatest comeback the living world will ever experience.
That's nice. And I would say to young people out there, most of you, this is my belief, and this is what my heart says, is that many of you who would be called indigo children, or would, you know, many of your souls have come here with the knowledge, the expectation, and the belief that a shift and an ascension will happen. That's why you're here, and you're here to help to bring that about. And what I am grateful for is what I see in so much of the youth, not looking at the brain dead ones, but looking at the ones who are awake and who are listening and who are aware, is that in you and with you there is enormous hope, because you have not surrendered your belief. That as Jacques Kerouac wrote, something good might come of all things yet. We have Matt from North Carolina. You there, Matt?
Yeah, Mike, Guy, the two of you are both peers of mine, so thank you for letting me speak to you. Seems like the handbasket is picking up speed. And, you know, recently I had a friend die very shockingly and tragically. And, Mike, it was a great comfort to me, your words about living in right relation, because it was a comfort to me that in the years that I'd spent knowing this guy, we were in right relation up to then. And, you know, I know there's probably people feeling a lot of grief right now. And what I would just reiterate is what Mike's been saying all along. You know, it's, if we can do our best at this point to live in right relation to each other and to the earth, you know, even in grief, that will be a source of strength and comfort. So thanks, Mike, for giving that to me.
That's an amazing, well-timed comment, Matt. Thank you so much. I was up with Carolyn Baker in Boulder last week, and we were talking about Guy McPherson. See how popular you are? And Carolyn said, you know, I wonder if he might benefit from a grief ceremony, but the grieving part of this is essential to all of us, to feel and bear witness to the sadness, because that's the only way that we can pass through to something greater or deeper. And I would add, too, not just living in right relation, but for those who are true warriors, being willing to go inside and face your own shadows, to clean up your own life within, with you as the only moral compass inside, because as you do, you change the energy in yourself, and what we need is a big change of energy. Sorry for the rant. Guy, we got 6 minutes left. One more call, but what do you want to say?
Well, the dealing with the grieving process is absolutely fundamental.
This is not only an amazing time to be alive, it's bad what was going on. And to not recognize, not acknowledge that sadness, not deal with that sadness, is an oversight, I think.
Yeah, it's something that will act as a sea anchor, I think, as we try to move through this and try to ascend to a higher place. We got one more call. Let's see if Steps from New Hampshire is there. Steps, so that's got to be a cool name. Are you there?
Hi. It's an honor to speak with you, with Mike and Guy, in this momentous times. I'm going to spare the question of how do we keep from depression, because we keep going over that.
Yeah, we got 5 minutes left.
I hate to go there, but I'm like, find a city to live in. I'm thinking of relocating to San Francisco. I noticed Mike chose Crestone. Guy, do you have any opinions as to where might be a better place than others?
Well, if you're interested in surviving for a longer period of time, then...
No, it's where somebody, some friends of yours are gardening, right, but...
Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, there's a garden culture in many, many towns, many places, many countries. I've never seen
it. Yes, but do you think there's one that's more environmentally secure?
No.
Along with the Stormy politics, though.
Let me jump in there, Steps, because we're down to the last few minutes. I did not pick Crestone. Crestone picked me, or Spirit transferred my ass here. This is where I was sent, and this is where I have become part, a contributing part of a community. And if you focus on geographic location, you're probably going to doom yourself anyway. What you need to find, because human beings exist in almost every place on the planet, and you can't play Russian roulette with climate change. There are certain things you can be aware of, but what you need to find is a place that loves you, that you love back, where you contribute to it, and it contributes to you, and it's stronger because you're a part of it. You cannot find that listed on a map anywhere. Guy, last 3 minutes. Go ahead.
Well, a couple of things. Yeah. Find a place, love the place, protect what you love.
Yes.
And I want to make another plug for Mike Cosby's film.
Yes, please do.
Premiering on the campus of the University of Arizona on Saturday, May 4th. You can get all the information about it at my website, Nature Bad Blast, and in particular, the post I put up today has all of the near-term events that I'm included as a part of, including this one. So this is the first one, and it tells you where the film is premiering. Mike did a great job on that. It took him 2 years to make that film, and 2 years and a lot of money. And so hopefully it will be worthwhile to him.
Make sure that we get a link when something's available to watch. I sure am looking forward to seeing it. There are some real gems, Guy McPherson, coming out now from so many of the people that you and I admire and respect, people who have walked with honor, people who have carried a tough message with honor in their personal lives and in the way they carry the message. There's a lot of really good stuff being said here. And we shouldn't perhaps write it off, because inspiration and innovation are the things that we need, I think, more than anything else right now. Guy McPherson, Nature Bats Last, GuyMcPherson.com, climate scientist, becoming a very good friend and an indispensable cultural and energetic ingredient in this walk that those of us who are facing shadows, cleaning our lives up, and preparing to live in a new energy, you're indispensable, Guy. I want to thank you so much for coming back on the Lifeboat Hour tonight, and I'm sure it won't be a year before you're back again.
Well, I hope the system doesn't hold that long.
I totally agree with you, man. Maybe we'll be doing it next just by telepathy or some other wonderful... amazing process, but it ain't over till it's over. And Guy McPherson, thank you. Stay on the field. Keep swinging.
It's always a privilege to be with you, Mike. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you guys so much. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is Tracker Truth, man. It's amazing stuff going on. I'm toying with asking Derek Jensen back on. What do you think? Yeah? I mean, there's all of these really cool people who have shone with such a bright light, who have walked with honor and integrity. they're all coming out with real gems now. And winter's over. It's time to get some of them back on. I've also reviewed Dmitry Orlov's new book. That'll be coming up sometime in the near future. But for tonight, the 21st of April, 2013, this is Michael Rupert, Tracker of Truth with the Lifeboat Hour. I'll be back with you next week here on the Progressive Radio Network. Good night.